Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Joe Farr, good to have you with us on the broadcast again. Give us an update of what's going on. The Friday's job number is caused for a lot of market movement in the market. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Dave. Well, actually, that was the third of three very significant things this week. This is the week, since we're recording this on Friday,
yep.
This week is the week ending August 3rd. So, three very important things this week, and let's kind of take them in order.
Okay.
The first thing that happened was the Wednesday Fed meeting. Building up to the Wednesday Fed meeting, expectations for Fed action had been growing. And as they grow, the effect Fed has on mortgage prices and MBS prices is the expectation for increased demand. And it's both typically Fed QE is good for both MBS and for the stock market. So as that expectation was growing, especially like Monday and a little bit on Tuesday, MBS prices were improving. This is following the week before when we saw MBS prices fall following the ECB announcements, but I'll get into that second. Fed action, expectations for Fed action, improving prices, and then they came out kind of flat. They didn't do anything. The statement was just like the statement before, and kind of disappointed people that were expecting a movement, at least movement toward QE3.
Right.
And so MBS prices fell following that. So building up to that, improving prices, Fed action, or lack of action, falling prices. Then on Thursday of last week, you'll recall the Fed President Draghi's comments about we'll do whatever it takes, right?
Right.
And so that really encouraged the market, but in a different way for MBS. It encouraged the stock market. It created a shift into riskier assets and out of safer assets. And so that Fed action had the impact of improving the stock market and hurting MBS. All right. So then along comes the real announcement Thursday morning. We find out that this will do whatever it takes is predicated on somebody else doing something first, and and then it's predicated on the country receiving the aid, accepting certain requirements. And so a whole lot less encouraging than we'll do whatever it takes. And
right.
As a result, stock market fell and MBS prices improved. And,
right.
And so the third thing, as you mentioned to begin with, the jobs report was getting back to kind of fundamentals, the jobs report was better than expected, and as you might expect, MBS prices fell and the stock market rallied. So the net effect of all this, very, very volatile week, was we ended the week just about exactly where we began the week.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, it's fascinating how dynamic these markets are, and we keep talking about the importance of having the MBS quote line as a service. But we were pre-recording this because you're going to be at a conference, or we're both at a conference. You and I are both out of the office.
Right.
And so we're recording this on Friday. So what can we anticipate in the week coming up, Joe?
Well, as packed as the current week was, next week is going to be thin. There is nothing of great significance. The 10-year and the 30-year Treasury auctions are going to occur on Wednesday and Thursday of next week, and that has had an impact on mortgage prices in the past, MBS prices and mortgage rates. And so those I would think would be the most significant. But with all these external influences and all these the creation of expectations and then the realities that sink in are going to continue to weigh on the market. So, next week, look for Treasury auction announcements about 1 o'clock Eastern time on each of Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, with Wednesday and Thursday being the more significant of those. And then there are things like the jobless claims every Thursday is going to be interesting, especially following up on the surprise of this week's jobs report. And a couple other minor economic announcements, but it's going to be a far cry less significant next week as it was this week, and hopefully a good bit less volatile.
A little less volatile. No kidding. You're going to be telling our listeners where you're off to. Alice and I are up here in northern Michigan in Traverse City at Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association Conference.
I'm not going to be having that much fun. I'm going to be at a booth at the Lenders One Conference. We're a preferred vendor for the Lenders One member companies, and they're a great group, a very significant group of mortgage companies
yes.
are members of Lenders One. And so it's a great way to get in front of many people and to share ideas and thoughts about what's going on and to see if our service can't be of value to the companies and their employees.
But, Joe, thank you so much for bringing us
sure.
an update. And be sure to greet all of our friends there at Lenders One, as well as all the Lender One members, of whom many of whom we are clients of ours. And we just respect that group tremendously and wish them all the best. Have a great week, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin'.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everybody. Each and every week, we bring you an update on all that's going on in the world of regulations. Well, this time it's being brought to you from Northern Michigan. We're attending the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association Conference in Traverse City, Michigan. It's beautiful up here. It's so much cooler than where we're at back in Texas. Anyway, let's get on with it. Alice?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, this is great. It's beautiful up here, and I am bringing you the legislative update. And, you know, the main news that came out recently was the CFPB issued their semi-annual report, and I finally had a chance to take a look at it. And it's really interesting. All this time, I thought part of their mission might be to identify and address outdated, unnecessary, or unduly burdensome regulations, as it says in their mission, for
<right.
laughs> us. But that's all meant to what the consumer thinks is unduly burdensome. So I don't think we're on the same page with what's supposed to be moving forward with CFPB. I want to give you a few other tidbits out of the report. Do you know they've hired 889
wow.
people? So that's their staff right now. They have the complaint website. They've taken in 55,300 complaints. Of those 55,000, 43% were about mortgages. Okay, phew, at least we're not half of them, right? The rest are about credit cards and bank accounts and student loans and that kind of stuff. 79% of those mortgage complaints are related to making the monthly payment and loan problems related to servicing. So that's the other good news, right? Let servicing have 75-80% of the complaints. So now that leaves us with only about 8% are application, meaning application, origination, or broker complaints. And then another 2% basically about underwriting and the credit offer. So we're really a small part of the overall complaints that they've been receiving so far, and I think that's a good thing. A company's filing responses, when the consumer files a complaint, the CFPB kind of filters through all that, and then a certain amount of them get sent to the company, and the company has to actually rebuttal, you know, the complaint. And then the consumer gets the chance to respond to the company's complaint. So CFPB in this report talks about how many times did the consumer agree or not dispute the lender's response. That was a good number, too. 66% of the mortgage complaints were actually closed without any monetary relief out of the client. 46%, the consumer did not dispute the response. And another 40% didn't even respond. So you got a, what's that, 86% chance that there's going to be a complaint and the response is going to go pretty smooth. So another main thing within their report is to watch what are they still planning for 2012. So two of them you already know about. We are looking at the proposed rule for the RESPA Truth in Lending form change. And that comment period is going to be closing in November. We're also looking at, actually that's going to be November 6th, you have to comment on the combined GFE and TIL. They're also going to be looking at the HOPA, and that proposed rule is out there until September 7th, so you've got to get in and read that rule. They're going to be looking at the servicing standards, so there's going to be standardized servicing. It is on the list still to have loan officer compensation looked at before the end of the year, so we'll be watching for that, let you know as soon as it comes out, and of course high-cost mortgage loans, the rules out on those. So, you know, we've got a pretty big hit list still that they're going to be putting on us before the end of the year. But here's the good news that came out of it. They say in this report they don't expect the final GFE until to actually be in effect until later in 2013. So a good indication we'll get a little bit of time to get that to work. So let's see. As of now, those are the main things we're watching is where the CFPB is going. And I think overall that lets us know we've got some breathing room here. So far, year to date, they've spent in 2012 $247 million. So we'll let you see, do the math on that for 800 and some odd employees. We'll let you all take it from there. Anyway, that's my update for now, Dave.
Thank you, Alice. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Well, hi, folks. This is Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. And you know what? Today, I'm the only one that's actually really here. Everybody else is out at conferences or at a Joe's at the event with the I think it's Lenders Live, and Dave and Alice are golfing. They were on a pontoon cruise yesterday. Today they're golfing, and then tomorrow I think it is that Dave speaks at the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Conference. So given that Dave and Alice are out golfing and I'm here in the studio, I wanted to talk a little bit about how golfing relates to mortgage banking. Now, one of the things we always know about golfing is you want to avoid the water. Well, that's always important. Don't want to get your ball in the water. And you also want to play to your strengths. So if you're really good at wholesale, then maybe getting into retail is not the best thing. You want to do the things that you do well. That also plays to your staff. If you've got a really awesome accountant, they may not be the best person to take over running the sales force. And vice versa, if you have a really good salesperson, you may not want them to take over and run accounting. Surprisingly, we've actually seen that on a couple occasions where folks that are great at sales think that they also should run accounting, and it doesn't usually go well. So we need to fit people in the places where they are the best. There's a book out years ago, A Good to Great, Built to Last, and it talked about having the right people on the bus and the right people in the right seats on the bus. And that's what play to your strength is in golf, is you want to have the right people doing the right things at the right time. One of the other things that we learned in golf, and I was on the golf team in high school, so some of this is hearing what my coach used to say, and you want to listen to your coach, you want to listen to your caddy. You know, you've got people around you. It's important to have people around you on a golf course who have played the course before, been there before, understand what the hazards are, and the same thing applies to running a business. It's important to have people who have the been there, done that T-shirt, as Dave likes to say, people who have been down the path before and can help guide you around the course. So that's another important thing. And I guess the last thing I would say is that it's important to walk the course. If you need to have an idea about what you're going to be facing, and that in our world is like having a business plan and a financial forecast. It's important to know where you're going to go, and that's part of what the business plan accomplishes, it's important to know how much money it's going to take and how much money you're going to have when you get there, and that's what the financial forecast does. So we want to be sure, and in our businesses, just like in golf, we want to play to our strengths, we want to avoid the water, we want to listen to our caddy, and we want to walk the course before we get there. Well, we're going to go back to the rest of the show now, so hope everybody has a great week, and we'll talk again next week.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back to the broadcast. There is a lot of news lately about how this administration, specifically the Obama administration, through the U.S. Treasury Department, has been putting unprecedented pressure on Ed DeMarco of the Federal Home Finance Administration, the regulatory body overseeing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and been putting extraordinary pressure on them to agree to do principal reductions, write-downs on the loans, on certain troubled loans. I did an interview with Maria Bartiromo on Closing Bell last week. It was last Thursday. I encourage you to go over to CNBC, and when you go to their website, in the search box, put in my last name, L-Y-K-K-E-N. It'll bring up that video. I encourage you to listen to it, as there was a great argument. I was debating economist Jared Bernstein on this point, and it's a fascinating discussion. But really why I'm bringing this up is this plays exactly into the interview that I'm about ready to share with you that I recorded at a recent conference. Now, you may say, well, Dave, I'm a loan originator. I'm not interested in anything to do but just loan originations. Well, my advice would be, if you consider yourself a mortgage professional, you need to hear what's going on in the industry, even in the area of loan servicing. So get ready to listen to one of the more innovative ideas that's going on in the marketplace as it relates to servicing, and see how it might apply to you.
Folks, I'm so excited to have with us Frank Pallotta, who is the managing partner of Loan Value Group.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
You saw a need, and you saw an opportunity to bring something to market. What was it going from idea, concept, to really having something that's making a difference?
Well, after spending 20 years in the mortgage industry, I've seen a lot of cycles, both good and bad cycles in the industry. And what we saw here for the first time, I think, in the history of the residential mortgage industry is widespread negative equity. We've seen home prices drop in some areas as much as 50 or 60%. And not only does that present a problem, obviously, for the homeowner who's looking at their equity disappear, but it presents a huge problem for the banks. And what the banks are finding, that with unemployment as high as it is, with defaults as high as they are, they stand to lose a substantial amount of money, and we're not that far removed from bailouts with the banks, that they really don't need a bigger problem.
Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, when you started the industry, and your background, so they get to know you a bit.
Sure. I've spent pretty much my entire career covering mortgage bankers. And it's not just the mortgage industry. I've seen the mortgage banking industry from an underwriting standpoint, from a servicing standpoint, from a loan origination standpoint. And it was really that overall understanding of mortgage banking that I was able to really come up with this idea.
So you saw the need. We saw the market starting to get more and more negative equity. Property values are falling. Everything that's been in the market is reactive. You did a really good job of articulating that there's two groups and how one group's need is being met, the other is not. Explain.
Sure. Well, there are two reasons people default in the residential industry. Number one is they can't make the payment. They've had a job loss, or one of the spouses have lost a job. The other is that they won't make the payment. And we've started to see that a lot over the course of the last few years. With substantial negative equity comes a high incident of what they call rational or strategic default. And most of the solutions out there, almost all the solutions in the industry, cover the former. They look to try and solve for a borrower's payment by adjusting their coupon or somehow adjusting the term of the mortgage so that the payment is something that they can afford. What's never been addressed, let's see, how do you address negative equity? And our solution really stays away from trying to fix the borrower's income statement, and what we try and do is fix the borrower's balance sheet.
Frank, there's been, it seems like there's been a shift in how consumers are viewing home ownership. Any thoughts on that?
Well, for a long time, I think consumers have always viewed their home as the number one asset that they would make their payment on. It was not just your shelter. It represented some form of retirement savings for the consumer. And when you look at three, four, five, six extended years of home prices going down, the behavior of the homeowner goes from looking at their home as a secure asset that they can look at in their retirement years, 5 or 8, 10 years down the road, to, gee, do I really want to be in this home? They almost, and we're not quite at this point yet, they almost look at it as a stock investment. Is it going to go up or is it going to go down? And in a lot of cases, a stock investment that doesn't pay dividends with a very low likelihood of going up is not a stock you want to buy. So, you know, what we want to really do is reintroduce back to the industry, and I think the servicers and the banks should really take note, the connection to the homeowner that we're establishing with the responsible homeowner reward brings back to the homeowner that this is an asset. This is an asset that not only the consumer should care about, but the bank should care about the homeowner's feeling about their home.
Your value proposition, it goes, I mean, start at a macro and then bring it in. What do you see is your overriding value that you're trying to bring to the industry? You're starting to touch on it with that last comment.
Well, the servicing industry and the residential servicing industry in general was really about making a mortgage or originating a mortgage to the borrower and then stepping out and never being involved at all with the consumer until such time that the consumer goes into default or has a delinquency. The airline industry does very well by having reward points attached. Borrowers will fly more with an airline based on reward points. People will use their American Express card more because of American Express reward points. We think the residential industry needs to create this connection with the borrower in the form of reward. It's not really a reward to keep a borrower from going into default. It's a reward to make the borrower understand that their servicer understands, just like they understand, the consumer understands how important their home is, the bank understands how important the home is to their own shareholders, to the bank's own shareholders. Remember, a consumer isn't the only one that loses in a default. The bank loses, and when the bank loses, the shareholders lose. Quite honestly, the U.S. taxpayer loses. So everybody needs to be aligned with the fact that the homeowner, the home is an important asset to the homeowner, and everybody needs to be aligned in making sure that that stays at the top of the consumer's balance sheet.
You make a really interesting point that it relates to the airline industry providing rewards and the connection that's happening. I never really got this in this whole interview. I have not really got it until that. We have had a problem in our industry is that we make the loan and we expect the consumer to make his payment for the next 30 years or whatever period of time they're going to be in that home. We have never really connected with them and communicated with them in a way that would want them when troubled times hit, whether it be all the stresses that can hit and be a factor to a homeowner making their payment. What you're introducing is the possibility is we need to rethink servicing and the relationship with the consumer on an ongoing basis.
That's exactly right. That's exactly the way I think we should be looking at the industry. And, no, and you're right. It was a reactive industry that they looked at only when a borrower was in distress, and that's really not the way we should be looking at the asset.
That is a fascinating concept. I wonder how many people have really thought about that, Frank.
You know what? There are the people that have really gotten their hands around the program, and I will tell you, GMAC, for one, has recognized that this is not just about keeping the borrowers current. It's maintaining a constant connectivity with the borrower so that you can introduce anything you want, including, and I'll just go back to some of the details of the reward. One of the benefits the servicer gets is we ask for regular updates of the borrower's contact information. I will tell you, one of the prime reasons that you see borrowers roll from 30 to 60 to 90 may be the servicer's ability to even contact the borrower. And that's another point that you made early on, David, is when you originate a note and you step away from that note, there's no mechanism in place that regularly updates the borrower's telephone number or the borrower's email addresses. And we do that on a regular basis such that if there is distress, There's a very quick way to get back in touch with the borrower. The other point that we want to make about having this connectivity to the borrower is there's a lot of changes going on in the industry, both government and private changes in the industry. If you want to be able to reach out to your borrower and have your borrower take advantage of what might be another government program or another private program in the market, when the borrower, for example, is enrolled in the Responsible Home and Reward, there is daily contact with that borrower. They have their own website. They can go there. So if there's a message that the homeowner needs to receive from their bank, you put it on their reward statement. If you've opened up your reward statement from Amex or your American Airlines points, you'll see a variety of different offerings in those correspondents. We think the servicer should be looking at the same thing, and GMAC is one of the firms that recognize that.
So for those of you that own risk as it relates to servicing, that's really where your service comes in, is those that own risk in the form. They have a servicing portfolio. They own the portfolio. They own the delinquency risk. You can go in and quantify the risk before it becomes risk. Explain that.
Well, sure. The main driver of default, and it has been for decades, is negative equity. When you look for where you may have problems in your portfolio, you start with how much negative equity there is. Then you look at other factors like the geography, where this is happening. You look at severities in certain areas, how many homes are on the market. You look at HPI or home price indicators on where home prices are going. And you look at how many loans or how many homes are on the market. And you put all that together and you pretty much have a good idea. And there's enough information out there to let you know that once a borrower goes delinquent, for example, greater than 60 days delinquent, there is a greater than 90% likelihood that that homeowner will never come back again. So greater than 90% of the loans that go down more than 60 days will eventually go into default, causing huge losses for the bank.
You have a responsible homeownership reward. Why is it that you call it that?
There are a lot of homeowners that want to try and do the responsible thing, and they want to do the right thing. Now, that's not saying that people who default are doing the wrong thing, but all the solutions in the industry really are triggered when there is a delinquency or there is a default. And there's a lot of people out there that want to try and do the right thing for their family, for their communities, and we think it's time that you reward those consumers for trying to do the right thing.
So, you know, they're making their payments. A lot of people are saying, why reward somebody? They're doing what they're supposed to do. But the reality is people are really – we're in unique times. We've never been here where we're watching property values fall off this far, and we're at a place where programs have been designed only to help those that are in trouble. Yours is the first program that predicts – a risk factor who might be in trouble or might be heading towards delinquency at some point in time. And then you set up a program where they are rewarded. So that's the Responsible Homeownership Reward Program. Let's get into it. So your customers, who are your customers that are the ones that you focus on when you form a relationship with?
The customers really sit into three or four large groups. And you did mention that they were risk owners. Risk owners take the form of mortgage insurers, banks, loan funds or mortgage funds, and quite honestly, the U.S. government. The GSEs and what they provide in terms of protection on Fannie and Freddie loans is no different than a bank when they have loans in their portfolio. So their risk is almost identical to the banks.
And let's get into who is eligible for a responsible homeownership program.
Really, the main criteria for being eligible for the Responsible Homeowner Reward Program is negative equity.
So that is the number one biggest predictor that you're seeing is the you mentioned strategic defaults a little bit earlier ago. How does the Responsible Homeowner Reward Program help owners? What are the specifics of how you actually help them?
What the homeowner lost through the dislocation in the market is equity. In other words, they've lost the incentive to make their mortgage payment. The Responsible Homeowner Reward returns a portion of that incentive in the form of equity back to the borrower at such time that the loan is paid off or refinanced. So it's a compromise. The borrower is looking for, the borrower receives from the owner of the loan some promise that they will reduce their payment in the future in exchange for not becoming delinquent on the loan.
So it's not a reduction of the principal, but it's a reduction of the payment. Am I correct?
It's a reward that's really meant to offset the lost equity.
Okay.
In many cases, the borrower's payment doesn't change. Remember, there's the main reason borrowers default from a negative equity standpoint has nothing to do with the payment and everything to do with negative equity.
We'd all like to think we're done with negative equity issues, but we're not sure. But stay tuned. We're going to be back right after this brief break.
Mike Frantoni, good to have you on the broadcast again. With all the uncertainty going on in the industry, Mike, These conferences are so important. You have an upcoming conference. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, thanks, Dave. I think you're right. There really has never been a more important time to focus on risk management and quality assurance issues. And that's why we've put together this conference, which is September 9th through the 11th in Dallas, MBA's Risk Management and Quality Assurance Forum.
Tell us a little bit about the content of this conference.
Certainly. So we're going to have a couple of general sessions focusing on changes in the regulatory environment, managing risk within your organization day-to-day, both loan by loan and across your institution, and managing risk in the context of these new regulations. And as such, we're going to have speakers from the FHA, from Ginnie Mae, CFPB, and from some of the bank regulatory agencies. Then we're going to have a large number of concurrent sessions in four tracks: risk analytics, underwriting, servicing QC, and quality assurance. You know, topics ranging from mitigating repurchase risk to developments in automated underwriting, looking at the latest from the rating agencies, and then the reemergence of manual underwriting. You've had too much reliance on AU in the past, and now you're having underwriters having to get back to basics and learn what it takes to underwrite a loan manually.
A lot of people need to be at this. How can they learn more? What's the website?
So you go to the MBA website, www.mortgagebankers.org, and it's right in the upper right there. It's the RMQA conference, Risk Management and Quality Assurance, September 9th through 11th in Dallas.
Listeners, I encourage you to be at these conferences. This is important, especially with all that's going on, as we talk about here on the radio program regularly. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the broadcast and telling our listeners about this important conference.
Thank you, David. Look forward to seeing everybody there.
Welcome back to the broadcast. This is David Licken, and I'm interviewing Frank Pallotta of the Loan Value Group.
Let's talk about who created the Responsible Homeownership Program and how it came to be.
Loan Value Group came up with the idea of the Responsible Homeowner Reward, and Loan Value Group really marries three expertise. The first expertise is in behavioral economic theory. Second is in consumer marketing. And third, finally, is a pretty good understanding of mortgage finance. So when you look to change borrower's behavior, you need to have a good idea of what borrower behavior is all about. And when you do it with the reintroduction of an incentive back to the borrower, that's really where, you know, we understand that it takes understanding the borrower behavior to be critical.
You're focused on the consumer, keeping the consumer in the home. You're focused at rewarding them to say, yeah, it's regrettable you have negative equity. You're really in a situation. But if you continue in this home, you are going to get the following benefits out of it.
Banks can use it two ways. They can provide a cash reward back to the borrower at such time the loan is paid off, or many of the institutions use the reward as a credit toward paying off the mortgage.
So what if a bank doesn't allow a homeowner rewards program? What do you say to those guys?
Well, it's pretty simple. I think everyone in the mortgage industry, and specifically the service industry, understand it's a low-margin business that you really try and make your money on volume. And the mortgage industry, the service industry, was built, I think, primarily on 2 to 3% annual delinquency rates. We've got 2, 3, 4 times that number now. And what we try and do is when you keep the borrower current and you don't move them onto the loss mitigation team and down the road of foreclosure, you preserve that margin, that precious margin that makes the servicing industry run profitably. So there really truly is a value to the servicer to keep their consumer current, and that value can go beyond the reward itself. It's the banks and the institutions that stand to lose in a default that would gain the most from our program.
Give me some examples of some companies that have used this and have used this successfully. I'm sure by now you're starting to get some success stories down. Give us a couple examples.
Sure. GMAC Mortgage in 2011 recognized that they had some risk that they wanted to address. They looked to our Responsible Homeowner Reward Program for a number of reasons. First is it has a proven history of lowering delinquency rates on average by a little more than 50%. So just from a risk management standpoint, it's a program that worked. What they really understood and what they really liked was we really don't burden their servicing operation at all. It's a private label, third-party outsourced program that we reach out to the borrower in the name of GMAC Mortgage. So from a servicing standpoint, the folks at GMAC understood that they could really affect loan performance without burdening their servicers. And you guys know all the large servicers are under a lot of scrutiny about what they're doing, how they're doing it, if it's not work with the AGs, if it's not work with servicing standards, it's certainly work on what they're doing internally on keeping their technology up to date. We outsource the entire responsible homeowner reward to Hewlett-Packard, and it's all onshore call centers. And again, it's done in a private label fashion with very strict warm transfer protocol, where if we deal with the borrower has a question about their mortgage debt, we transfer it back to the servicer and vice versa. The responsible homeowner reward itself has really very little to do with the mortgage debt and everything to do with enrolling the borrower in a rewards program. That's what the script sticks to, is their enrollment in the rewards program and what they get for staying in the rewards program.
How many borrowers in total are now involved in the program, and what do you anticipate the growth to be?
There's about 20,000 borrowers that have been enrolled in one way or another through the program. We've got a variety of different programs, not just programs that promote borrowers to stay current. We've got programs that promote curtailments, programs that promote modifications and refinancings. So there's been about 20,000 borrowers that have been through the rewards program in one form or another.
That is considering the size of the potential problem, that's just a drop in the bucket. It's really just starting is what you're doing. You guys are early in this process, am I correct?
We're early in the process. Well, the company and the program itself is over 2 years old. We're starting to see a little bit of a pickup. It took the industry a while to understand that the concept of rational default existed. And it really wasn't until we started to hear discussions in Washington recently with Mr. DeMarco and some of the other folks out there that negative equity is a driver. So servicers are beginning to understand you can't solve a negative equity problem by lowering the borrower's payment. And we've seen a pretty substantial pickup in volume over the course of the last 6 or 8 months. And to your point about it not being – yes, it is a drop in the bucket. From a statistically significant sample standpoint, the reduction in delinquency rates that we've shown over both first and second liens and loans that are both in raw form or in a securitization stand out enough for this thing to be considered a success.
Well, it's a success, but I think there's huge market opportunity for you is the bottom line. You sit and look at what you've touched, but to worry what you can yet achieve, borrowers' lives, it's hundreds of thousands of borrowers.
Oh, it's in the millions, and that's one of the reasons why we've partnered with the teams that we have is, if a servicer or a loan owner wants to do a program, they really ask three main questions. Can you do this quickly? Can you do it in scale? And can you do it cheaply? And we've developed this program to answer all three questions. The scale is the biggest problem, and you had mentioned there's close to, depending on who you talk to, 13 or 14 million borrowers that are underwater, and they're both in raw loan form and securitized form.
You brought up Ed DeMarco. I mean, he's been in a lose-lose situation for what he's trying to achieve there. Do you see a shift in the industry as far as an awareness of we've got to take a different approach to this problem?
Well, Ed DeMarco has really drawn the line in the sand, and I think it makes some sense from his standpoint. You cannot have widespread principal forgiveness. It can't be done fairly. It can't be done legally. It can't be done from an accounting standpoint. You know, unfortunately, I think the industry needs to understand that the solution to widespread negative equity does not have to be principal forgiveness. We've come up with a program that is not principal forgiveness, which I think tackles one of the larger reasons he's getting beat up. The other reason he gets beat up, and again, this is a good, sound reason Ed DeMarco has, he doesn't want to burden the servicers. Servicers have already been asked to do a lot of things by the industry, and him throwing another new concept, new idea on top would really probably cause the servicers a little more trouble than we'd want. So we built this thing again with an outsourced third-party private label partner so that the servicer is not burdened. And finally, one of the other things that Mr. DeMarco brings up, and I do think it makes a lot of sense, you can't really promote a problem that opens the door to moral hazard and fraud. And again, our program was built to prevent both moral hazard and fraud. So the three big reasons Ed DeMarco has for not looking at a program that addresses negative equity, I think we've answered it for him.
I would like to get more insights on your perspective on the industry. What are your thoughts? Where have we been? Where are we headed? What do you see as the challenges and the opportunities that lie ahead for us?
Well, I think there's a lot of opportunity in the U.S. residential space from a capital market standpoint. But what end investors need some comfort on is either the ability to predict cash flows or the ability to predict the direction of the asset. And what we're facing now in the industry is very high unemployment. So the comfortable ability to predict cash flows is still in question. And home prices, if we're not at the bottom, we're kind of somewhere near the bottom, but I don't think we're going to see any significant increase in home sales and home prices for 5 or 8 years. If you look at Lori Goodman's view on shadow inventory, you take a look at where the industry stands as far as being aggressive in picking up on foreclosures, we are going to have your basic Math 101 supply-demand issue with a lot of homes on the market for a very, very long period of time, and that's not even getting into the demographic change that we're going to be seeing over the years. So I do think there's opportunity, but the opportunity that investors need to take in the industry has to be more proactive. You need to somehow look to affect cash flows and not look to be reactive to cash flows.
Do you see the private markets coming back at all?
Private markets will absolutely come back. I don't think the private markets will come back in any fashion that sees an increase in home prices or home sales for more than 5 or so years.
What is your strategic perspective on the industry? Where do you see things going?
No, I mean, we talked about the private label market here, and you're right. 95% of all the securities that are created are backed by the U.S. government. Unless we're able to find a mechanism to transfer risk into the capital markets, we won't see the market grow. And a good, healthy housing market will always provide for a good economy. What we can't do is have the pendulum swing the way it did, you know, from 2004 to 2007. The ability to really make sure that you manage a risk-reward profile in the residential industry is very key. I honestly don't think that will ever get out of whack again. I think the wounds that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, people are going to they're going to be licking those wounds for a very long time. But the pendulum has swung too far the other way. But I don't think you're really going to see any real move into the in the private label markets until at the very end, investors are very comfortable that what they're getting their hands on, they can get some comfort level, not just with them, but with the people above them and the people above them, that there's risk to take in the mortgage industry that's worth taking.
That's excellent. How can people get a hold of you? And for those that want to learn more, let's give them your website.
Sure. The website for the program itself is rhreward.com. For the company, it's loanvaluegroup.com. And they can reach out. My email address is frank@loanvaluegroup.com. We have hundreds and hundreds of phone calls a week from consumers wanting to ask about the reward to banks and servicers wanting to know about the program itself.
Frank, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to sit down here and answer questions. It's a delight to have you here with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, David.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents a wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show. This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening